I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What did James Biden say behind closed doors? We'll talk about that. Kirk Cameron comes on, talks to us about culture war stuff, AI talk, Inez Stettman on the student loan debt relief, and so much more coming up on I'm Right. We're going to talk to a GOP congressman in a moment, and let me explain why we're going to talk to this particular GOP congressman. James Biden, Joe Biden's brother, had a closed-door meeting with the House of Representatives yesterday where he had to answer questions. What kind of questions? Well, probing questions about just how compromised the president of the United States of America is by our enemy, China. Realize that there's endless evidence that the president of the United States of America is compromised, probably paid in some way by the Communist Chinese Party. Now, knowing that, understand this. In this closed-door meeting yesterday, from my sources, it was virtually empty. Congress is on vacation, and the GOP, who loves to tell us every single day how much they're out there, and they're fighting for us, and we're fighting for you, send me $25, and I'll stop Joe Biden's agenda. Nobody, I should say hardly anybody, could even be bothered to show up? Wouldn't you like, I know I would like, a party that cares as much about what's going on in this country as you do, as I do? I long for that. How do you not even show up? The president of the United States of America allowed a Chinese spy balloon to traverse the country from the Pacific to the Atlantic before shooting it down. Doesn't that tell you something? Shouldn't you be curious? Anyway, the media keeps trying to tell you that there's no evidence Joe Biden's compromised and corrupt. They tell you all the time.
There's no evidence tying Joe Biden to Hunter Biden's businesses or any improper activities. When you hear that, what do you think?
I think it's blatantly false.
No evidence. There's no evidence tying Joe Biden. I am curious about that. And I'm so curious that we brought in one of the congressmen who cared enough to show up yesterday and ask James Biden some questions, and I credit him for that. Joining me now, Congressman William Timmons of the great state of South Carolina. Congressman, one, credit to you for being one of the few who showed up. I understand it's vacation time and most did not, but you were there, we were not. What did you learn behind closed doors?
Well, I think we've all known that Jim Biden has always just been a hanger-on. He wasn't the brains behind the operation. It was Hunter. And, that was confirmed yesterday. He said repeatedly in regards to the millions of dollars they got from the Chinese Communist Party linked company CEFC that he trusted Hunter. He trusted his judgment. He's a Georgetown and Yale law educated lawyer, and he was the more sophisticated party. And he is who Jim relied on for his willingness to do business with the CEFC. But this is the thing. CEFC is state-owned, state-adjacent, state-controlled. All Chinese companies are. That's just their system. And so it's ridiculous that they're trying to hide behind the fact that the CEFC is a private company. There's not a single person that has any knowledge about the Chinese government or the Chinese economy that would say that. So they know that that's not true. And we're going to get to ask Hunter some questions about it next Wednesday.
What is this company? What was this deal the Biden family set up with them?
All right, so this is the thing. The Chinese government uses their economy to extend their influence and power globally. CEFC was originally set up to take part in the Belt and Road Initiative, where the Chinese government loaned billions and billions and billions of dollars to foreign governments for infrastructure projects, for energy projects, whatever they were. And so the CEFC was basically getting free money from the Chinese government, and they would do deals with foreign governments. And most of those times, they would actually have to straight up bribe people, because that's how it works in third world countries. But in the United States, they had to do something a little bit different. They couldn't straight up bribe governors and senators. They bribed the Bidens. And so Hunter and Jim Biden were paid millions of dollars to set up meetings and to influence blue state governors and senators. And there's an email where Jim Biden's talking about phase one. They're going to get out and they're going to influence the governor and the senators in New York and Minnesota and California and Virginia, New York City mayor. And they're going to use their connections to get the CEFC to compete in energy deals to provide energy to these states. And so, sure, they'll give millions of dollars here, millions of dollars to these Bidens. That's what they do all over the planet in developing countries. They literally straight up pay people because that's how it works. But in the United States, we actually have the rule of law, and we have disclosure, financial disclosure. We have ethics requirements. Our system is different. And so that's why they hired the Bidens. And honestly, Jim Biden admitted to all that. He just alleges that CEFC is not controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And I got to be honest, that's just nonsense.
Yeah, that's nonsense. What do we, and obviously Jim Biden, no one knows or gives a crap who this guy is. And the same thing with Hunter Biden, meaning the influence they have. Joe is the one with the influence. He's the one who's been the senator and vice president and now president of the United States. I still can't believe that. Either way, is there a direct connection, meaning a link that we can see or that we'll be able to see that says Joe was the one who was actually peddling the influence because he was the only one with influence?
All right. So one, I think it's important to realize that Jim Biden and Hunter Biden, over the last 20 years, probably 85 or 90% of their income comes from these foreign governments, whether it's China, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Russia. So this is their only job. And more importantly, they also have no relevant skill sets. Jim Biden didn't graduate college and has never had a successful operation outside of influencing using the Biden family name. Hunter Biden is addicted to crack. He's a drug addict. He has a sex addiction. He's a delinquent. He's a delinquent. So, I mean, these people are not businessmen. They're not consultants. They didn't provide services. They provided influence. So the question is, how do you link the president to this? And, you know, I think it's important for people to realize, I don't really care about Hunter and Jim Biden. I care about whether the president of the United States, Joe Biden, is compromised because of his poor judgment associated with his son and brother's business dealings. That's what's important, because that's a national security threat. So the question remains, what did Joe Biden know and when? Clearly, his brother and his son were leveraging the Biden brand. Clearly, they were doing everything they could to enrich themselves off of his public service. So the question becomes, what did he know and when? And how much money did he make? We know that Jim Biden gave him $200,000 and $40,000 as loan repayments. I'm going to say loan repayments in quotes. We still don't have evidence that Joe Biden ever actually gave money to Jim Biden. And we're going to get to the bottom of that. But again, we also know that Hunter Biden has paid for a lot of things with Joe Biden. He had an office after he left the vice president's office in the CEFC building. I mean, look, we're going to get to the bottom of this. The American people deserve answers. And let me finish with this. I'm a lawyer. I'm a member of Congress. I'm a member of the Oversight Committee. I was a white-collar prosecutor for 5 years. I don't trust the Department of Justice to do the right thing. I don't trust the FBI. I don't trust these rogue prosecutors in New York and Atlanta, these partisan hacks. And if I don't trust those people, the American people don't trust those people. So what the Oversight Committee right now is doing is restoring the trust of the American people. We are actually following the evidence. We're using the appropriate mechanisms to get to the bottom of this. And that's what we have to do. Our country's future depends on it, because if the American people don't trust our institutions, we're lost.
You're 100% right about that. We are lost without that trust being regained. Now, at the end of this long road you're traveling down, and I'm glad you're traveling down it, exposing all these people, there has to be some sort of accountability. It doesn't look like the numbers are going to be there for impeachment. So where does that leave us at the end of all this? Not that there's not value in exposing it. I'm glad you're exposing it. But what can actually be done, or what will be done?
I have not given up hope on possibly voting on impeachment. Again, the deposition next Wednesday is going to be critical. What Hunter Biden says will determine whether the president is impeached. And he's going to plead the fifth to half of everything that we ask him. But the question becomes, what can we learn foundationally that he can't plead the fifth on? And that's what we're going to be spending our time on over the next few days. You know, the crazy part is even by the Department of Justice's special prosecutor's own standard, can we even impeach Joe Biden if he lacks the mental capacity to create the mens rea, the criminal intent to be guilty of a crime? I can't really emphasize enough how ridiculous it is that the Department of Justice determined that the President of the United States lacks the mental capacity to be charged with criminal activity that they acknowledged occurred, but that they couldn't prove the mens rea, the criminal intent necessary to convict him. What in the world is going on? So theoretically, if the Department of Justice says he doesn't have the mental capacity to be guilty of a crime, I mean, I could make an argument that makes it harder to impeach him. But I also don't believe that. I believe that this Department of Justice I don't want to use the word corrupt, because there's a lot of really good, hardworking people at DOJ, but it has been politicized. It is protecting the abundant criminal activity of the Biden family while also persecuting Donald Trump and his family. It's just, President Trump says it right. We're in a banana republic, and this election in November is going to determine whether we have a country after this. And that's why it's so important. And again, I'm just following the evidence, and we'll see where it takes us.
Congressman, fan. I'm officially a fan. Very impressive. Come back soon, please. That was friggin' awesome. The president, I still laugh about it. I know it's not funny, but I still laugh about the fact the president's not mentally competent enough to stand trial. But he's the president. Okay. He's also taking your money, and he's handing it out to college students. He's buying votes. You heard all the student loan stuff today. We'll go over that. My friend Inez Stettman is joining us in just a moment, and we'll go over that. Oh, jeez. Well, they're taking your money that we don't have. In fact, they're borrowing money to pay off college students. So do you think maybe it would be a good idea to start making some preparations for a rocky financial future? Did you hear the news about commercial real estate today? You know, these big banks, these big corporations have been buying up all the commercial real estate, residential real estate, all kinds of real estate in the country. Yeah. That bubble looks like it's going to pop, too. Make preparations. You don't have to sit and be scared and suck on your thumb and all is lost. You just have to make preparations. Part of that is making sure you have something of tangible value that government cannot destroy. That's gold or silver. That's hard assets. Doesn't matter what the lunatics in Washington, D.C. do. Those gold coins that Oxford Gold Group sends you, the gold coins they put in your physical hand, their value cannot be destroyed. Call Oxford Gold Group. This is for normal people. Let them get it in your retirement as well. Right now, you might qualify for up to $2,500 in free coins, but you can't get any of that unless you call them. These people are my friends, and I trust them without end. 833-995-GOLD. Tell them I told you to call, all right? We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Early in my term, I announced a major plan to provide millions of working families with debt relief for their college student debt. Tens of millions of people in debt were literally about to be canceled, their debts. But my MAGA Republican friends in the Congress, elected officials and special interests stepped in and sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked it. But that didn't stop me. I announced we were going to pursue alternative paths for student debt relief for as many borrowers as possible. And that's the effort that's been underway the last 2 years.
You know what kind of a great mood I'm in today? I'm actually not even going to focus on the President of the United States abusing the word literally like everyone else does in this country. I'm going to move right on past that. We're going to focus on the horror of student loan debt and the president just deciding to, quote, cancel it. He didn't cancel anything, obviously. He handed it to you. Joining me now, my friend, is Stettman. She is, of course, of the Independent Women's Forum, host of the High Noon podcast. Okay, Inez, by my tally, that's well north of $100 billion in student loan debt that has been canceled. Could you please explain this?
Sure, Jesse, I can explain it to you. It's literally coming out of your pocket. tweak you a little bit there. This is something we're going to keep seeing happen because this is so politically good for the Democrats. Last time when they were losing in a lot of polls in the midterms, right, they pulled out a student loan forgiveness plan that Biden knew, the Biden administration knew was going to be struck down by the Supreme Court, but they did it anyway as a political stunt. Here we are looking at like piecemeal forgiveness through cobbling together a variety of statutes. The Biden administration is going to keep doing this. The Democratic Party is going to keep doing this. In my view, it's incumbent on the Republican Party then to deal with this kind of debt crisis. And it is actually a debt crisis by putting the bill where it belongs, which is with universities who have raised their prices astronomically over the last couple decades. A lot of their wealth, the universities, comes from taxpayer-backed programs like loans and grants. And of course, we know that universities otherwise are pushing ideas that are destroying this country. So it's really a win-win. But Republicans, I think, are going to continue losing politically on this issue until they're willing to put this bill where it belongs with the universities.
Well, Inez, I think you and I both understand that the Republicans are not going to have the brains and or the spine to actually do something about it. But let's assume that they did get some sort of a testicular transplant and a spine. What would Republicans do if Republicans actually stood for something?
I think it's real simple. I think this is a solution that is both politically wise and is just. It's the right thing to do. If we were looking at this kind of lending, especially when we're looking at graduation rates for universities, only 60% of people who enter a university as a freshman graduate after 6 years. Fundamentally, this entire system is propped up by the taxpayers, and it's a scam. And it's a scam that's culturally costing us enormously, right? So it's both creating this huge problem now for two generations of people who have disproportionate debt to what the value of a degree is. And it's creating a problem for us, as we all know, culturally, because basically we're politically credentialing people and indoctrinating them in everything the left wants them to learn. So really, to me, this is a no-brainer. We should be taxing university endowments. There's absolutely no reason why universities that are basically hedge funds with a university attached should not be facing the same taxes as, you know, every small business in America, especially since their product is so subsidized. There's no reason why we should allow them to accumulate all of this wealth tax-free. And then, to add insult to injury, we should kick the taxpayers once more after they've already funded all this and say, well, on the back end, because the product wasn't worth the money paid for it, we're going to stiff you with the bill, taxpayers. No, the obvious solution is to put the bill right where it belongs with universities, which, again, any clear thinking Republican, which I realize you just said, I realize what the Republican Party is, and they don't have the balls to do it. But this is an obvious solution. It would be a popular solution. It's kind of a win-win for the Republican Party, but they're more into lose-lose.
Inez, can you help us understand a couple basics about this whole thing? Because again, we get confused. I get confused. They tried to do this before. The Supreme Court did strike it down, but now they're doing the same thing again. How much of this am I on the hook for is what I'm asking.
Well, unfortunately, you're on the hook for basically all of it. 93% of student loans are actually owned by the taxpayer already. If you're working with one of these companies like Moella or before that it was Navient, right? If you're working with one of these companies for your student loans, those are just administering the loans. They're just contractors. The Department of Ed owns almost all the student loans. So these are taxpayer loans. And if we do nothing, there will be a functional bailout, even if Biden does nothing, even if Congress does nothing, because the default rate is so high on these loans. Fundamentally, the taxpayer has made a bunch of loans that are not backed by the values of the degrees. And again, the university is perfectly happy with this, right? They got their check up front. They're not, you know, waiting around for these payments. It's you, the taxpayer, who's waiting around for people to pay these loans. So it really does behoove us to find a solution for this. And somebody is going to pay for it. And right now, it's going to be the taxpayer if we do nothing. So again, that's why I advocate that we should have the universities paid for it, because otherwise it's coming directly out of our pockets. It already is.
Moving on past this, I'm 42 going on 80, so I love documentaries. It's pretty much all I watch anymore, and the Independent Women's Forum has a good one out there. Here's a little trailer for it.
California has passed legislation allowing transgender inmates in the state's correctional facilities to be assigned housing based on their gender identity.
We were very nervous, angry. We weren't given a voice.
No one asked us how we felt about this. No one did.
In September, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed Senate Bill 132 into law.
As soon as the transfer started, there were people having sex on the yard, in the porta potties.
We're getting the predators, the sexual predators, people who have been incarcerated for rape, men who have been incarcerated for oral copulation, men who have been incarcerated for crimes against women.
Honestly, I really don't think the public cares.
And as the plight of prisoners is never one that really catches the public eye, people genuinely don't care. I do care, and I do care that female prisoners are now being ritually abused. What's going on?
Yeah, right. I mean, yes, of course, if you're convicted of a crime, I don't want prison to be cushy for you, but I also don't think it should be the price of committing a crime shouldn't be to be raped by some guy who's forcing you to call him she, right? And that's really what's happening in these prisons. Of course, when you make it identification only, the men who are identifying as women to transfer prisons, as our trailer said, a lot of these are guys who've been convicted of sex crimes, and out of some misguided sense of political correctness, we're allowing literal sex criminals who identify as women to transfer into the women's prison without any regard for the safety of the female inmates around. And obviously, like, who wouldn't? I mean, I'm surprised it's only been as few as it has been, frankly, because, I mean, what guy wouldn't want to transfer out of the male prison into the female prison? But this is the absurd position in which we find ourselves, because the law has to be able to distinguish between men and women, and increasingly in a variety of different ways, whether it's through quote-unquote protections for gender identity, or whether it's through the more traditional route of something like the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. We're wiping out the ability of the law to distinguish very simply between males and females. And that has consequences, you know, not just in prisons. It has consequences when you get a pat down at the TSA, right? It has consequences when your kids are in school and they want to have a separate locker room that separates boys and girls, right? We separate boys and girls, men and women, in 1,000 different places every day, because we recognize that sometimes those sex differences matter. Well, increasingly, especially in blue states, we're passing laws that make it not just advisable to be able to distinguish between men and women, but actually illegal. And unfortunately, women in prisons are among the victims that are paying the price for this.
Yeah, it's friggin' horrible. Go watch it. Inez, I appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to talk to Kirk Cameron next about faith, culture, the country. I love Kirk Cameron out there, putting himself out there all the time, fighting for what's right. Now, before we get to Kirk, you know what else is right? Taking care of your body. I admit, I'm not the best in the world. You know how I eat. You understand my love of things, garlic, cheese, bread. I know. We all put things in our bodies that our bodies have to filter out. They do. That's where your liver comes in. Alcohol, toxins, all the stuff we put in our bodies, our livers are the ones who have to shoulder that burden, and we never help. We never help our livers. We just kind of assume, well, something's getting taken care of in there. Start helping your liver in a drug-free way. That's another thing your liver has to filter out. Whatever pharmaceuticals you're putting in your body, your liver shoulders that burden. Get Liver Health Formula. Drug-free, all natural. It's to support your liver needs to clean your body for you. And they're giving out free bottles of omega-3s right now at GetLiverHelp.com/Jesse. GetLiverHelp.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, we're really excited to announce we are making a brand new children's TV.
Iggy, what are you doing?
Sorry, I was just getting ready for the big announcement. The treehouse isn't gonna build itself. Did you tell him yet? Did you?
No, we haven't told him yet. Would you just like to tell him yourself, Iggy?
What, little old me? Tell everyone one of the most amazing, most important, most groundbreaking announcements ever recorded in the history of the world? That's a lot of pressure. What if I mess up? There are probably millions of people watching me right now.
You can do it, Iggy. I believe in you.
Okay, here it goes. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and squirrels, we're teaming up with Brave Books to make, drumroll please, a kids' TV show called Adventures with Iggy and Mr. Kirk. Yay!
Reminds me of my childhood when you could turn on shows. Well, my mom, you know, if I'd stayed home sick from school, she could just turn on shows, a cartoon channel, and walk out of the room and just know that I'll probably learn values and things from it. It's honestly, it made me kind of sad. I'm thrilled it's there, but it made me sad remembering a different time. Joining me now, obviously the man, the host of that, Kirk Cameron doesn't need me to introduce him, the host of the news show, Adventures with Iggy and Mr. Kirk. Kirk, I know that's a weird way to introduce you in the show, but honestly, watching it, it made me long for a time that's not that ancient. I'm not 80. It made me long for my childhood when I could watch something like that.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. We used to watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and yeah. So many great cartoons. And yeah. And it's those things are like a thing of the past. You look at Coco Melon, you look at Sesame Street, you look at Blue's Clues, and they've gone so woke that we have an increase in New Jersey of over 4,000% of children who are identifying as non-binary in the last couple of years. I mean, just nuts, because they're identifying with these characters. It was funny, the thing that came to my mind when you said you remember the times when you were at home with your mom and you're watching a TV show, and now we live in a day that's so different. I know, it's like partly because of the stories that we're showing our kids and reading to our kids. We have kids who grow up and now they're 30 and 40 years old still at home with their mom watching TV shows and playing video games on the couch in the living room. And I think it has a lot to do with the values that we're putting into our children at a young age. It's been going on for a long time. It's time that we pull back the reins and take hold of our children's future. That's what we're trying to do with this new show that combines biblical moral values with timeless lessons that parents can trust in an entertaining format with animation, high energy, hilarious dialogue, and guest stars at every turn. I think it's going to be a game changer.
I think it is too, and I treasure this so much for young families out there. Kirk, I get emails to this show, my radio show, all the time of, Jesse, I can't watch anything with my kids. People don't even turn on their TV. One family emailed me last week, they threw out their TV. They said, I can't turn on anything with my kids. What's
That's
the point of
a
even
great
having
idea.
It?
I make my living, a career in television, but if we chucked our TVs out the window, that could be the best thing that we ever do. If we could take our phones and get rid of them, in many ways, we would be so much healthier. Now, I'm not recommending it. I use my phone every day, all of that stuff. However, we have technology and abilities that we don't have the moral capacity to handle as a society. And I don't think that means get rid of technology. It means increase your moral capacity. Understand what's important and right, especially when we have sacred duty as parents and grandparents, and train ourselves and our children how to stick with the values and principles that are going to lead to blessing and liberty and protection. Otherwise, it's going down the toilet and it's nobody's fault but ours.
Kirk, before I actually ask you about that in particular, I know everyone wants to know, first of all, how can people watch this now? There are so many young families who watch this show.
Yeah.
How do they watch this? They want entertainment like this. What do they have to do?
So to watch Adventures with Iggy and Mr. Kirk, you just need to know that it's going to be free. It's coming out on YouTube. It's coming out on Rumble. It's not going to be hard to find. What we're doing is we're actually making the show now, and we're building an army of people that are helping us make it happen. So because it's not being funded by Hollywood or Netflix or some big streaming platform, we have to raise the money ourselves to create this, kind of like The Chosen did, right? You don't want Sony to make The Chosen, or you don't want some big company tied to BlackRock and Vanguard to make the show, because it's likely going to sabotage the values. So they had the audience chip in the dollars to make it so that it can stay in the hands of the people who care. So we're asking people through Brave Books to join this fundraiser and help us raise the money for 20 episodes of this free television program. We've got enough funding for almost two episodes now, and you can go to watchbrave.com. That's watchbrave.com. And you can support us and get in on some of these great rewards, like getting two tickets to the red carpet premiere of Adventures with Iggy and Mr. Kirk in Nashville. And we got a really cool after party where you can hang out with us and ask all kinds of questions and celebrate. You can also get one of your kids or grandkids in one of the episodes of the television program. So there's all kinds of great rewards, but we need to raise the funds for it. And that's what Brave Books is doing. And I'm leaning in and doing my part as Mr. Kirk and getting the word out right now.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll be making a donation about the time that we hang up from this interview, 100% in. Kirk, social media, the phones you brought up, the technology, the endless wave of filth that comes at us these days from so many different ways that you and I didn't have to deal with, honestly, when we were younger. How does a young family, a Christian family, you want to raise your children with their eyes focused on the right things, how do you deal with the balance? Because I understand, honestly, that you can move to the mountains and cut off all electricity, and you can honestly live a much more pure life, but we can't pull ourselves out of society that's full of darkness anyway. We have to be in it. So what's the balance? What do you do as a parent with your children?
Yeah, I'm learning this as I go. I'm going to be a grandfather soon, and things are worse now than they were when my kids were little and we gave them phones.
Yeah.
I even made a documentary about this, but things are changing so rapidly. So I'm not an expert in it, but what I do know is this. There is nothing in the world that will replace a mom and dad and grandparents' time invested connecting with your children and establishing a real relationship with them that is built on love and grace. Your kids are going to mess up with the phones. As long as there's technology out there, they're going to find a way to access porn, or they're going to access people or friends who have a phone who do have inappropriate stuff on there and go down rabbit holes that is likely going to be inevitable unless you're Amish and you live, you know, in a walled off community and you're not having access to that. Even then, I still think they're going to get access to it. So what do you do? Understand that living in relationship with God and setting an example for your kids that is genuine and sincere, letting them know that you struggle with the same things they struggle with, and that we're all learning together, and we have a hope, we have a North Star, we have an anchor for our souls that can give us power to rise up above these things, and give them a hunger and thirst for what is good and true and beautiful and right by letting them see how that in you produces a superior way of living. And as you stay in relationship with them, teach them how to use the phone, teach them how to use the computer, get all of the locks and the controls that you can put on there to protect them. We've got to do all of that. But in the end, I don't think there's a quick fix. I think it has to do with relationship, has to do with genuine, authentic living and teaching them the truth so that they love it. Because what they really need is they need to download a filter that is much stronger than anything Google or Apple can provide. It's called the fear of the Lord and a love for righteousness and goodness and beauty and truth. Once they have that, they'll filter the stuff out themselves like a good, mature, God-fearing adult can do. That's what we're ultimately shooting for, because when they turn 18, all the filters come off anyway. They got to be able to handle all this stuff on their own with internal filters. You're putting your kids together to give them away. So start training them now. Put the controls on and slowly start taking them off as you transition responsibility to them.
Kirk, I'm a fan. Once again, really quickly, if you don't mind, give out the website for people who want to support this. I'm going to support this.
Please, please go to watchbrave.com, watchbrave.com. And together as an audience who care about this stuff more than anybody else, let's make this and significantly change the landscape when it comes to children's programming.
Watchbrave.com. Go. I'm going to do it. Match me. Kirk, I appreciate you very much, sir. Thank you. All right. AI, I don't understand it. But apparently it's going bad on us quickly because we let the communists write the system. How bad? Let's talk about that next. Before we talk about that, let's talk about scams. Timeshare companies really make me angry. Scammers make me angry in general. I hate the email that suckers in, maybe the elderly person. Oh, I'm stranded in Africa, please send money. And obviously that doesn't probably work on you, but it works on enough people that they still do it. That's why they do it. These timeshare companies have been doing this kind of crap forever. They get you into a timeshare, and they get you to sign that contract, and then you find out when you try to get out of it one day that you're locked in for life. That's what they tell you. Oh, sorry. Pay your annual fees. Oh, you want out? Too bad. So sad. Lone Star Transfer will get you out. They will take on that timeshare company, and they have a 99% chance of getting you out. That's how successful they are. You pick up that phone. You call Lone Star Transfer. 99% of the time, they will get you legally and permanently free of that burden. Please call them. Don't sit and agonize. Don't pay another annual fee until you call Lone Star Transfer. 844-310-2646. All right? We'll be back.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I understand about that much of AI. It's way too intelligent for me, but I also understand that really, really bad people are creating it, and it's going to be our future. It's going to be involved in everything, and I want to know exactly what's going on. So joining me now, Senior Counsel for the Internet Accountability Project and my friend, Will Chamberlain. Okay, Will, everybody who's been looking at the news for the past couple days has seen this new Google AI, and there's some sort of controversy around it. Maybe you can update us to begin with on what exactly happened.
Yeah, so Google, like many other major tech companies, doesn't want to get left behind in the AI arms race. So they've been building their own language learning model, basically something you can just ask questions to and it will give responses. And those responses aren't like pre-programmed in. It's like the AI model scours the internet to try and understand the English language and understand information, and then so that it can respond to questions on its own. That said, because the AI is being still programmed by people, those biases of those people tend to find a way into the way the AI responds to questions. And in this case, the biases are those of incredibly woke leftist idiots, those people that Google hired. I mean, the guy who runs the Google AI program, it's called Gemini, is noted for on Twitter talking about how terrible white privilege is and how terrible white people are more generally. And as a result, you have an AI that can't function, that doesn't answer questions properly. So when you ask it, for example, to generate an image of a pope, it generates an image of a black pope. When you ask it to generate an image of white people, it says, no, we don't do that here. When you ask it to generate an image of anybody, like any other group, it just automatically inserts, we need to have a diverse image here, and then creates diverse images of groups of people where there may or may not have been any diversity in the first place, especially like when you think about, history where there would not, or historical examples from the far past where there wouldn't have been a diverse group of racial individuals rather. So you have a very, 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 what it ends up being is a very stupid AI, an AI that can't respond to questions effectively. And I think it's sort of a microcosm of how DEI and wokeness makes us stupider as a general principle, right? If it makes, it just, this is a very, very good example of you program an AI with wokeness and DEI and it suddenly can't answer basic questions, whereas other AIs are perfectly capable of it.
Well, I don't know how concerned I should be about Google. I know this is a massively powerful company, and please tell me if I should be very concerned, but the concept of this in general concerns me. It concerns me the White House knows how important this is. They've already announced that they're going to get involved with AI, that it seems like the people who hate us the most are the ones creating this, and that's a problem, isn't it?
I mean, I think the problem is that AI is going to eventually replace search engines, right? It's going to be the way that most people sort of use as their portal to learning things and understanding things. And that includes our kids. If AIs are already this good in terms of, basic responses to questions this year, and they're increasing in capability very quickly, then that'll be your sort of default way of interacting with the internet, I think. And if the default way of interacting with the internet and how you get it is asking questions and then getting woke responses in turn, so that sort of has deep implications for how our children will end up learning in the future. And so that's, I think, the big scary thing. I mean, the general, I think there's sort of an overblown sci-fi version where we need to be scared of AI taking over the world, like through Skynet or something. I don't think that's quite the right analogy here, because I mean, a language learning model is not gonna take over the world, but these things are really about, education and AI are going to be very, AI is going to be instrumental in how our kids are educated in the future. And we want AIs that are truth seeking. I mean, that's why Elon Musk is developing his own AI at X.
How should the right handle this issue, Will? Meaning, obviously, we love to be hands off. Hey, do what you want. It's free markets, that kind of thing. At the same time, we can't allow our enemies to take over every single critical system, including our education system, with things that hate us. So how do we split the baby here?
I think it's a combination of things. Generally, we're looking more and more at antitrust at companies like Google. There's no reason we should be nice to Google at all. They're an adversary of the conservative movement. And so we should be hostile to them more generally. And then I think when it comes to education, that's about, putting in place policies a lot like what Ron DeSantis has been doing, banning wokeness, because you put in place the right policies banning wokeness more generally, they're also going to, change the way that these AIs are developed so that they can be used in these schools. It's kind of the analogy would be how Texas was able to control how textbooks were developed by putting in place conservative rules for its schools about what could be in textbooks.
Yeah. Will, thank you, my brother. I appreciate you very much. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. Now, would you like to learn more about this a lot more in depth? My boy Slater, Mike Slater, has show out about it. Would you like to listen to my radio show? Download a podcast, my radio show. Well, I have great news. Go to thefirsttv.com/podcasts and you will find it all. Thefirsttv.com/podcasts. We'll be back with the funniest light in the mood we've ever done. Hang on.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. It is time to lighten the mood. I'm sorry. It's time to lighten the mood. And listen, I'm a big fan of honoring people, right? Honoring people from our past, whoever it may be, societal leaders of any kind, veterans, heroes. I like naming buildings after them, statues. I'm a big fan of that. Sometimes, though, you can run into a problem. And look, I don't know what the solution is, but sometimes you run into a problem.
A former Fort Wayne mayor is getting some national attention. Thousands of people voted online to name the new city county building in his honor.
But that probably won't happen because of his name. News Channel 15's Don Austin is here to explain.
Well, Heather, Mark, the people voted, and the top pick so far with more than 10,000 votes is the Harry Balls Government Center, named after one of the city's longest-serving mayors, but not everyone's on board with that name.
Well, Harry Balls apparently was a great mayor. That's what I'm hearing. If you read the comments, actually, some people are very serious about what he did as mayor. The family was, you know, it's part of our history. I think it's part of the history we're proud of.
To pick the new name for the building, people went over to feedbackfortwayne.org. They made suggestions and voted. The overwhelming front runner was the Harry Balls Government Center.
Harry Balls was the mayor of Fort Wayne back in the 1930s and 40s. He even served a term in the 1950s. We have a street named after Harry Balls. So what's the big deal about naming the new city county government building after him?
I feel that it'd be an honor to have him have the building named after him. And so many people have voted for it. I say, let the people have the say.
I agree with the people. Salute to you, Harry Balls. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.